When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Matthew 16:13-16. Now it's time for Who Do You Say I Am with Father Mitch Pacwa. And now, Father Pacwa.
Hi, peace of God be with you. We're here discussing the New Age movement in America and Western Europe. And in past shows, we've talked about the ways in which the roots of it go back to 19th century America, to Spiritism, to Theosophical Society, and to its descendants. But not only does it have its roots in America, but also we see a lot of it being rooted in Indian belief, in Indian religion. And that's what we'd like to talk about today. What are some of these roots, and how does it affect us, and how did it get here? First of all, let's take an overview of the history of Indian religion and see how it developed eventually into Buddhism and so on. First, we have to go back to the third millennium B.C. That is, in the 2000s before Christ. That's when civilization began in India, up in the northwest, in the Indus Valley. That's where the first cities of India are. And they began around the same time that the first cities of Mesopotamia started, that is, the cities of Sumeria, and that there was a lot of trade back and forth between them, in fact, and a lot of contact culturally. One of the things that had been found, actually there are three of these that have been found in India, is a picture of a man sitting in the lotus position. I have here a picture of someone in that lotus position, sitting on top with their legs crossed over, both legs crossed inside each other's thigh, and the hands being held like this, an imitation of the lotus. And the hands are held in this way, according to modern Hindus, as a way for you to complete energy going from this hand into this hand, and that this is a way to find peace and an altered state of consciousness, okay, which we'll talk about today. And this lotus position is a very important part of yoga in Hinduism. But we also have to say this very clearly. Even though we see people practicing this form of sitting, we have no scriptures, no writings to explain what they meant by it. And what we know from that third millennium and also from the second millennium B.C., that is the 1000s B.C., is that the people of India, called Dravidians, a dark-skinned people who lived there, worshipped a fertility earth mother goddess, and that they did not have Hinduism by any means as we know it. Now, around 1500 B.C., a group of people, light-skinned, whiter type of people, called Aryans or Aryans, came from the north, perhaps from Persia or other places farther north of there, we're not sure the exact origin, and they conquered India. And they considered the dark-skinned peoples to be incarnate devils and of a lower caste. And they put them in the pariah caste, or the caste of non-touchables, untouchables, and that the people who conquered India were of a higher caste with their, and again, with their whiter, lighter in skin And they became the political leaders and the warriors. The warrior class in particular became political leaders. And another caste, as it's called, became the Brahmins, who were the priests. And they helped maintain their own purity among themselves by not marrying the untouchables, that it was forbidden to marry because that was of a lower caste. You always stayed within your own caste. Now, these Aryans themselves were not Hindus. They had their own god, a war god, whom they believed helped them conquer India. And they worshipped that war god. Well, the untouchables, the darker-skinned Dravidian peoples, would worship a mother god still, and perhaps other local gods. But we don't know a whole lot about their popular worship. And these Brahmins, who worshipped this war god, wrote scriptures called the Vedas. V-E-D-A is a Veda, and that was their scriptures. Now, the Vedas are mostly known for teaching people how to offer sacrifices, proper sacrifices, to the conquering gods of the Aryans. And that's mostly what it was concerned with. And it was for the priests to help them know how to offer sacrifices, at what times and what kind of sacrifices. They're mostly animal, and not even so much animal. They're much more interested in flowers and things like that. Butter, they offer a lot of butter oil. Now, the Vedas remained the religious belief, especially of these upper classes that conquered. Well, it didn't affect the popular level so much. And around the 800s BC, we see the rise of a new group of people, apparently from the Dravidian native people of India, but also some Brahmins who had been in India now almost 700 years. And these people are called the Yogins or the Yogis. And they start to write new scriptures that are now known as the Upanishads. They didn't write them all at once. It took, hundreds of years for the Upanishads to be written. But over time they developed, and when a new yogi reached enlightenment and had that personal experience of enlightenment, then he would write about it. Now, some of the yogis were believers in God. Some of them believed in many gods. Some of them believed in no god, and some of them were agnostic. One of the most famous agnostics about the existence of God was Gautama Buddha. Siddhartha is also is called. The Buddha believed that we had to attain nirvana, the state of nothingness, and that he wasn't sure if there was a God or not. He left that unanswered. It wasn't his concern. For him, it was getting out of this world of illusion and getting into a sense of truth and authenticity by meditation, just as many of the other yogis had done. And all of these different writings, the writings of the various yogis or the various Buddhist scriptures, which are not the Upanishads, it's a separate group of scriptures, would write about personal experiences of how to attain enlightenment and how to do different exercises. But the yoga itself was not really clearly developed yet. That took some time. We're going to come back in just a moment to see a little bit more about the development of Hinduism and Buddhism. Welcome back. We've been taking a look at the development of early Hinduism, which really in this period before the time of Christ can barely be called Hinduism. It's very loose. What we've seen so far is that there was an original worship of a mother goddess and perhaps some yoga practices, followed by a conquest by the Aryans who brought in their own god and their own sacrifices, followed by the rise of a group of yogis around the 800s and following, who brought the experience of religion to the people. Now, part of this is apparently a rejection of the religion of sacrifice by the Brahmins, in part. But we also have to be aware that it's not so clear-cut. Many Brahmins became yogis, too. Some Brahmins persecuted the yogis. And there's a lot of mixture. It's not a clear-cut development, and also we don't know enough about it. But we just can get general outlines, because not enough was written by the people involved that give us a clear-cut history. One of the things that we also see develop at this time of the yogis, or perhaps it was from the Brahmins earlier than that, we're not sure, is the idea of reincarnation, in which people are going to be reincarnated according to the way they live their life. Now, in the Hindu idea that's developed as it is today, and again, it's changed a considerable amount over the centuries, so that the idea of reincarnation is different today than it was in the earliest days. But what it eventually developed into is that you live in a certain caste, that is a certain class of society, and you are born into that according to the law of karma. See, this developed from that earlier idea we'd said that the conquerors of India belong to the higher castes and maintain their own racial purity by saying that the Dravidian native people were of a lower caste and untouchable. But then the idea came, not only are we born into this class, but we deserve to be born into the caste of warriors or the caste of the priest Brahmins. We deserve that. We earned it by having lived a good life prior to this. Now, a lot of this also helped maintain the racist aspects of early Hindu religion and politics. And they began to believe that the people who were untouchables would have to come back many, many, many hundreds or even thousands of times before they could ever move up a caste, while the Brahmins can keep on moving up. Now, what's the relationship and the hierarchy? First of all, they really believed that it's much, much better to be a man than a woman. If you're a good man, you come back as a good Brahmin man. If you're not a good man, you come back as a woman, because that was considered lower. And if you are a bad Brahmin, you might come back at a lower caste, like the warrior caste and so on. But if you're a good Brahmin, you keep on coming back as a Brahmin priest higher and higher until eventually you become incarnated as a Brahmin cow or a Brahma bull. Now, this is so important for us to understand why they do not slaughter their cattle. Even though many cattle roam around in India, they don't believe that that's just their grandmother, their aunt, or something. But they believe that these are highly evolved Brahmin priests who've been reincarnated at a higher and higher level, first as cows, and when they're good cows, then they're reincarnated as Brahma bulls. And when they come back a number of times as a Brahma bull, then they spin off of the cycle of reincarnation, and they go off to become one with God, as they call God, the Godhead, Brahma. And Brahma, they say, is like an ocean. And that when you spin off after being a Brahma bull a number of times, then you become so lost in unity with God that you become like a drop of water who disintegrates into the ocean of Brahma. And that's one of their goals, that you disintegrate as a person, at least according to some of the higher forms, more intellectual forms of Hinduism and yogism. This isn't all universal in India, by any means. There are a number of different sects and different groups, but this is one idea that is very common. And you can see how this idea has influenced many of the New Agers, who believe that what's real is the soul inside of us. And we keep on being reincarnated again and again until we become one with God. That's their idea. Now, this is not what we believe in Christianity. We believe in oneness with God, but not in this way. And we're going to talk more later on about what we mean by the kind of union with Jesus Christ that Christians are to believe in. But at least we understand where the New Ages are coming from and how they're related to Hinduism. At the same time, they're related to the Hindu idea. They're quite different. In the Hindu idea, you keep on coming up or down. depending on how you lived your life. They have a general belief, a general idea in a moral law. It's not real clear what that moral law is because the Hindu scriptures do not have 10 commandments that you have to follow because God said so. There are some general laws, but they're not put in the form of commandments like we see in scripture. To the people of Israel and to us Christians, God revealed 10 very clear laws and said, thou shalt not have other gods. Thou shalt not, you know, worship or use God's name in vain. You shall keep the holy of the Sabbath. Honor your parents. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness. Don't covet. That these commandments are directly presented to us from God. Well, in Hinduism, they are vaguer laws, but they are definite. And they are laws built into the nature of the universe. And if you break these laws, then you must pay back your karma, your own karma. Nobody can pay it back for you. And this has all sorts of ramifications. If you go against these general moral laws of Hinduism, then the law of karma will make you become incarnated as somebody lower in status than you lived in your previous life. So you can go lower in the castes if you are a bad Hindu. Or if you're good, then you can go higher and earn good karma. So there's good karma and bad karma that you can earn. And this idea, you know, affects Hinduism considerably because many times you see people who suffer and are sick will say, look, this is my karma. I must accept it because I did something wrong in a previous life and now I have to experience the punishment. That's not what we see in Christianity. In Christianity, many things we see go wrong with people. We are told to pray to God to have it taken away. We are told to ask God that evil stop, not just that we passively accept it. That's not Christianity at all. And we see Christ our Lord himself tell us to go to the Father and keep on asking again and again and again, because your Father will give you what's good. Whereas in Hinduism, the law of karma is something that is absolute, and you can't do anything about it because it's impersonal. Now, we're going to come back in just a moment to take a look further at the similarities and differences between Hinduism and the New Age movement. So please stay with us. Welcome back. We've been taking a look at the development of the history of Hinduism and some of its influence on the New Age movement. We talked about the notion of karma and reincarnation as it developed in Hinduism. And we're going to, again, talk in later episodes more in detail about reincarnation. But let me say this about the New Age version of karma. It is heavily Americanized and not what Hinduism believes exactly. In the New Age movement, they believe that we are reincarnated. Yes, they very, very typically believe this. Maybe not every single New Ager, but by far the majority do. But they believe that we are always evolving forward, that you can't go backward. There is no such thing as going backward. If you did something bad in this life or you experienced pain and you learned a lesson from that, and in the next life you're going to learn another lesson. You learned about bad and good, and as a matter of fact, many New Ages will even say there is no bad or good, no evil or good. It's all one. And therefore, there's no way to go backward because you can't break a law that doesn't exist. You can't be evil if evil doesn't exist. And so many New Ages reject that notion, not consciously. They don't really think of themselves as rejecting the Hindu notion. They just have an Americanized version that has more to do with an American belief in evolution forward, always progressing upward, rather than real Hinduism. Now, this is very important for us to understand. And let me say at the outset that Christians don't believe in reincarnation. one of the clearest things, it's not the only thing, and again, we'll spend a lot more time on it, but let me say at this point, too, that Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, says very plainly, very clearly, you die once, and then you are judged. Does it get any simpler than that? No. It's very straightforward. And there are a lot more things to say about it, but at this point, let me just continue to talk about what the Hindus teach and how some of this has continued to influence the New Age movement. We've mentioned early Hinduism and the Upanishads and early belief in yoga and reincarnation and karma. But Hinduism continued to develop over the centuries. And other forms of Hinduism, especially tantric Hinduism, began to develop in India and especially in Tibet. And this is a very popular form of Hinduism. This has to do with attaining altered states of consciousness by awakening powers within us. And this power is very frequently a sexual power. And you see in many of the temples, in Tibetan Hinduism and tantric Hindu temples, pictures, very graphic pictures, of people engaged in various sexual acts in order to awaken their own power. Now, they also associate that with many occultic things as well, occultic practices like astrology and so on. And also with occultic practices like walking on fire, walking on fiery coals that are hundreds of degrees hot, and many feet long, and they'll walk around and around and around barefooted without burning themselves. This has become, even today, a popular New Age practice. There's a guy who runs around the country giving workshops on how to walk on fire. And whereas we Christians should learn how to be on fire ourselves with the power of the Holy Spirit, these guys are walking on fire. Well, some of this comes from tantric Hinduism and its various occultic practices and sexual practices. Now, this appeals to our own society in many ways. Our society is very much interested in all kinds of sex and free sex, as a matter of fact. We see in the counterculture in the 1960s that one component was the free sex movement, that you don't need to be married, you don't need that kind of commitment. Sex is a recreational activity. In Hinduism, it became, in tantric Hinduism, I should say, it became a way for enlightenment. So it's religious, and you attain an altered state of consciousness through sexual activity. But keep this in mind. According to scholars that have talked to me about this, the tantric Hinduism's belief in sex as a way to attain enlightenment was enlightenment for the man, not for the woman. The woman was there as a means for the man to attain that enlightenment, as he would get into all sorts of very complex sexual acts so that he would, you know, get himself enlightened and in an altered state of consciousness. The woman was there just to be used, basically, according to the scholars I've spoken with. That's not the way the New Agers do it. The New Agers understand tantric Hinduism as a way for men and women to attain enlightenment, and so that women and men will both be involved in it, but that's not the origin of it. That's an Americanized version of it. And it leads to a lot of sexual immorality, by Christian standards, immorality. And this is also important for us to understand because so often they see us Christians as being judgmental, especially on sexual issues. You know, the Catholic priests don't marry, nuns don't marry, we're all uptight about sex, whereas they see it as a way to attain belief that they are God. Now, we have to understand that this is a very different worldview, and before we can communicate the gospel to people, we have to see what their worldview really is so we address their issues. Finally, I want to say about Hinduism that it has also continued to develop, even since tantric Hinduism, there's Kundalini Hinduism, which is a form of Hinduism that also is spoken of a lot in New Age movements, where they believe that along the base of the spine, there's a snake. At the very base of the spine, there's a kundalini snake. And this serpent can be awakened by kundalini meditation. and it goes up the spine. Now, along the spine, from the base of the spine all the way to the top of the head, are centers of consciousness called chakras. And I have here a picture of a woman sitting in the lotus position with lights beginning at the base of the spine, going up the base of the spine from the very first one to the sexual center, which is the second one. Then the third one is at the navel. The fourth one is at the neck. At the heart. I'm sorry. There's one at the heart center. Another one at the neck. And then there are two, one inside the head and one at the top of the head. And as the snake goes up there through various exercises and meditations, then you attain enlightenment. And that's Kundalini Yogi, which, according to the practitioners, is very dangerous unless you have a good sense of direction. So even among their own people, it's considered risky. Now, all of this has gone in to influence the New Age movement. We ourselves, as Christians, have to take a look at our own spirituality, how we are called to receive full maturity in Jesus Christ, as we see in Ephesians chapter 4, and to attain that maturity, and call other people to that maturity. And so, as we will go on in our next episodes, we'll talk about Christ and what He has to offer instead of what the New Age offers. God bless you.